Hello and welcome to another episode of In the Lane. I am your host, Tony Schwartz, MBA. In the Lane is a Miami Heat and NBA podcast brought to you by the great people at Anchor, empowered and hosted by the Five Reasons Sports Network. Today, keeping my theme of skill development and coaches, I have Roger Galo with me. Roger, how are you doing today, man? Thank you for your time. I appreciate you coming. Can you tell the people just a little bit about yourself? What do you do?
I'm doing very well, by the way. Thank you for asking. And I'm looking forward to having this discussion on In the Lane with you, Tony. I'm a basketball, by accident, I started a 14-year journey, unintended, but began to get sucked in by what I was starting to discover and question about my own shot. And it led me to start critiquing shooters, players that I was watching on TV and doing comparisons. And for the first time in my life, I began questioning why I did what I did. Why was I so good, apparently, at it, having been third in the country and in college ball, and fell in love with the game back in Indiana, appropriately, Indiana, the hoop state, played high school ball, very good high school team out in Western PA, moved out there, and then became a collegiate ball player, was recruited by some pretty legendary coaches like Chuck Daly and Jimmy Valvano, Don Haskins, Pete Carrill, ended up playing Division III ball, broke lots of records, third in the country, as I said. The NBA found me anyway, despite not having the social media that we have today, and didn't play pro. That was just a decision on my part that I ran with, and I've got no one to blame but myself. But all these years later, started questioning why I became the shooter I became. And that's what started the journey that took me outside of basketball to get answers, legitimate answers to the questions I began to ask, Tony. Why do we gooseneck? Why was the elbow under? Why do we stand the way we stand at the foul line and approach, come into the shot or approach the jump shot the way we were advised to do? And that's how it all began.
So I like connecting with a guest on similar levels. I like to find places that we can relate. And for the most part, it's basketball podcasts. We relate through basketball. And I know me and you had talked before, and we got into some of the nitty-gritty nuances of the game and what separates shooters and players. And that comes, I think, from passion. Like, I care enough about basketball and passionate enough about it to notice some of these minute details. When you found passion for the game of basketball, where was it? At what point of time in your life did you find it?
Good question. And I was about 10 years old, and it was in the state of Indiana, the hoop state. And a 6'6" gentleman came out. It was during school, right after school. They had a practice, an open practice, if you will, for basketball players. And I thought, what the heck, I may as well do this. I participated, and this tall 6'6" fella came out, who was the coach, palming two basketballs and proceeded to dunk, one with the right hand, the other one with the left hand. And we were sitting on the floor, so that 6'6" frame looked like it was 7'6" to us little kids. And then he began speaking about how it afforded him the opportunity to travel, to go to college, and so on and so forth. And at that moment, I was hooked. And if I wasn't hooked at that moment, then when I experienced my first shot that went swish, that was the moment that sealed it. That right. Just cemented it for me. And that's how it all began. From that moment on, I've never lost the passion. Never.
Yeah, it's funny.
More passionate now.
You and Tony Fiorentino share a very similar story, right? That first shot, when you saw it go through, it just changes everything.
It really did for me.
So you start picking up a basketball right around the age of 10. You start playing. You said high school. I'm sure you had a lot of shooting records there. You had some in college. You're noticing that you might make it to the pros, that you're starting to get some buzz. Like, what was that time like for you?
That was a questioning of my own ability kind of time. Mm-hmm. Like, I started because instead of playing Division I ball for Pitt or Niagara or Western or someplace big, I played it at a Division III school. And you kind of become acclimated to that environment. I remember going home in the summer to play pickup ball, and the level of competition, that the players were taller, they were faster, they were, you know, all of that. So I began questioning whether I could still play at that level. And even though I was considered a great shooter, back then they had hand checking in the pros. And back then they had no-cut contracts. And I literally had somebody from the Seattle Supersonics back then who spoke with me and said, "Roger, you know, we're going to ask you to come up to the farm league and play up in Bangor, Maine," I think it was. Bangor, Maine. Anyway, he says to me, "Look, we've got guys on the team that are making a lot of money." And this is where the business of the basketball thing that we hear often talked about hit me. You know, you may even be better than player we've got starting, but that owner isn't going to take very kindly to watching that player who's on a no-cut contract sitting on the bench and you playing in front of him, and you're not making anywhere near what he's making. And I thought to myself, gee, that's a reality. And could I cope with that? Did I want to deal with that? And that was part of what went into the decision to, you know what, I better go get a job. Now, if I had the shot that I've engineered today, I probably wouldn't have had that doubt. I'm sure of it.
So that's a great transition into talking about some of the skills and science and research that you've done and that you've looked into and developed. Talk to me about where the method began, right? Like, what was the first inkling that you might be able to develop something?
It was almost entirely by accident, and I really mean that. I started critiquing the players I'm watching on television, and this is 20 years after my college playing days. And I'm watching them, and I'm thinking, my God, these guys are longer, stronger, faster, better equipped. I mean, literally better equipped, better trained. They've got specialists, core developers. They've got vertical advancements. Everything is advanced except what appeared to me as I was watching the game, shooting. And then these articles start appearing like magically in front of me. New York Times, big black bold font style ink caption. 50 years of practice, comma, no results. What is that all about? It was about foul shooting, Tony. Foul shooting had not improved at the collegiate nor the NBA level in 50 years. So I thought that fed me. That was like adding gas to a fire. It just kept me motivated because I'm thinking, wait, it's not me being a bitter old man who, you know, getting older and you know, disappointed with the decisions I made or that I never pursued my best. It wasn't that, it was a reality. Then the USA Today article, 4 or 5 years ago, roughly, the NCAA Division I men's program tied a average points per game record that dated back to the 1950s. Oh, wait a second. No shot clock. The speed of the game, the pace of the player, the length of the player is nowhere like it was back then. There's light years ahead. It was baffling. And the article in the New York Times highlighted some of the things that they had professors from Columbia University and elsewhere comment about. And the conclusion that article came up with was there had been no change, no innovation in the way we shoot. None. Over all that span of time. And that was the traditional shot that I had apparently mastered to some degree to garner the attention I had garnered as a player. And I thought, geez, I'm onto something. Now, why? Why did I, by the way, I started noticing things because I'm critiquing my own shot and paying very close attention to other people shooting. And I'm recognizing the ball has left the hand after we drive our fingers downward into that famous gooseneck hand in the cookie jar action that is still being predominantly trained and taught today. The ball's left the hand. Why are we driving the energy and force downward if we're shooting up in the air and out in front of us? So that began me going outside of the community of basketball to find bona fide answers to these questions I was starting to ask. And it took me to universities and the departments like kinesiology, physics, geometry, anatomy. And I caught the professors who would have a discussion with me, and they started opening my eyes to elements I started recognizing were not only hard to repeat, movements that were hard to repeat, Tony, but movements that we didn't even need to make that were being made because they became popular.
Right.
That's what we do as basketball players. And no other reasoning than that in some of those cases. And that wasn't satisfying. That's why I sought answers from those professors. And man, did they open, and I had a hard time getting my head around this. I really did. It wasn't, oh my God, look at me. I'm starting to discover something really important. That wasn't the overall feeling at all.
Yeah, when you are first starting to put thought to this, you even just said, like, I had to go outside of the basketball community, right? Is there a moment of adversity there where you're starting to talk to some people and they're like, hey, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to make sense. This is bad for you. Don't explore this. You have to fight through some adversity to continue to push to get to the science of the method.
Still to this day, because and that's one of the reasons why I'm writing a book. It won't be a how to shoot book, but it'll be a thought provocative enough book to get people to start thinking, is it conceivable that there could be a categorically superior way to shoot that basketball and make more of those shots if it were based almost entirely in principles of science, drawn from kinesiology, anatomy, biomechanics, the way the body ought to move in certain circumstances lend themselves beautifully to a more effective shooting style, a more seamless shooting technique, one that has less movable parts. So there's an economy of movements that started presenting itself during this journey. And how can I turn my back on that, having been such a prolific scorer and shooter the old way, the traditional way? Which again is still being taught by the vast majority of shooting coaches, and every coach who coaches basketball at almost any level considers themselves somewhat of a shooting coach, which is one of the reasons why I'm not real fond of that term, shooting coach.
Right. And shooting coach tends to lend itself to outside the arc, but from what I understand, you're talking about revolutionizing just the shot in general, something that's away from a layup or a dunk.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about the floater. I'm talking about the jump shot, whether it's a short range, mid range, long range shot. I'm talking about even how a hook shot has some of these principles could benefit a hook shot.
Right.
Which is a very different shot. But some of those scientific principles can lend themselves to becoming a better hook shot player. And that there's a half hook, a baby hook, a full hook. Those are three shots that, my God, it wouldn't be detrimental to any ball player to be able to use one of them to your advantage, or two of them, or all of them, would it?
Now, and we, as we talk, we keep mentioning muscles moving in the right way and limiting extraneous motions. I mean, we're talking about efficiency here, right? That's the single word that this kind of boils to.
Efficiency, I have uncovered, and I just had a player who played for the Cavs. I won't mention his name. A couple years ago, he's 24 years old, 6'7", 7 foot reach, that I took and challenged him. I'm 6 feet. I'm out of shape, overweight. a skeleton of the athlete I was, and asked him to block while he was bodying me up a shot from the second block in the near the painted area, the foul lane, two times the exact same way. And the efficiency element allowed me to score both times on him, both times, with very little movement, with no extraneous motion, with such a high level of efficiency that he was literally scratching his head wondering, how the heck could he do that against me? I mean, it was, and it's fun. I mean, that is fun. It's fun for me, but the real value lies in, my God, I can teach others to take full advantage of this while they're playing, and some of them getting paid or earning scholarships to go to college and play.
Right.
And make that a lot, the game a lot easier, a lot more gratifying for themselves. How can you not like that?
You talked about taking shooters who are established and have been long dominant in the game, right? Like we mentioned JJ Redick and we mentioned Kyle Korver, but you see refinements even in their shooting platforms.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And the refinements are available and plentiful, believe it or not. And I don't like the way that sounds, but they exist in so many different areas of the entire technique.
Right.
Because there are, even at the highest level that some of these players are playing at, there are things that we've been allowed to do or we've adopted because they've become popular for whatever reason, or accepted and then repeated. And as a result, the level of efficiency is almost absolutely ignored. The level of the triple threat, which is one of my biggest secrets, the triple threat that we've all grown up on has some serious limitations to it. I've got a triple threat to the second power. An exponential triple threat. And that's pretty cool. And it came by virtue of this journey. Because this one of the ones I use most frequently when I'm trying to score from one of those players of that kind of size and level of ability, when they're trying to stop me from 25 feet out, and I don't mean to boast, but they can't because of the level of efficiency that I've incorporated into the technique. So between the technique, the categorically superior technique that's been engineered from those principles and the efficiencies or inefficiencies that I've removed, it becomes an almost unblockable shot. And what that does to one's ego or confidence is hard to describe. I mean, it boosts it very rapidly. I mean, you're looking at me. And I know you find it hard to believe that at 6 feet that I could be able to shoot a 25-foot jump shot off the dribble, off the catch and shoot against probably any NBA player in front of me.
Roger, I think you're cutting yourself short here. I'm 6'2", 175, and I'm looking at you, and I'm like, that dude would back me down. There's no doubt about it. I'm getting scored on. I think you're cutting yourself short.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you said it that way for this reason, Tony. Being able, and I'm big into this. I'm big into a complete package. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love to improve somebody's outside shooting. One of the easiest areas is the three-point shot. The other is the foul shot. But another area that should not be ignored, even by guys my size, is the ability to transition from all the way out there and be able to take either your guy or somebody who switched off to you and still be able to do a back to the basket move against a guy that might be a foot taller than you. That's talk about a craftiness level.
Right.
But the efficiencies that I've uncovered during this journey enables me or empowers me to be able to do that. And I hate to say enables me to, it enables any, those who I train who wish to take advantage of it to be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, and we talked about, I think, some of the differences between coaching youth and coaching age, but you figure something like this, getting it introduced around youth is really beneficial, right? Yeah. Having kids come up being able to play both ends with a lot more energy, that's you can translate it anywhere.
And to that point, and I'm talking to somebody about the there's a connection with this gentleman who intrigued me to have a conversation and see where this takes us sometime later this month, hopefully. And it's circling around the youth part of the NBA Without Borders, for example. And a big area of focus for me, and I'm still trying to get my head around this, is how to get not only to the youth, but to the coaches who are coaching the youth. Because if they don't understand some of the new scientifically supported nuances and changes that will make those youth ball players, female or male, so much better, so much faster, so much easier, then they're probably going to unwittingly undermine or contradict what I'm trying to achieve for them, for their benefit, for the benefit of the game, if that makes sense. So yeah. I mean, and that's, in full transparency, that's been one of the most disappointing eye-opening experiences of this journey. If I trained Tony Schwartz to do all this stuff this effectively and efficiently, and as soon as he leaves me and he goes to play ball at high school at an AAU program or a college, he's up against it. Why is he up against it? Because everybody else is touting the same old, the gooseneck, the elbow under. Why aren't you doing that? Why are you? And they're, as I say, they, I'm sure they're not trying to undermine it, but they only know what they know. And they're comfortable with that and have been for a very long time. And they're not going, it's not likely they're going to change that because Tony Schwartz comes in with this technique. And God forbid Tony should have one bad shooting night, because they will somehow convince you, coerce you to buy back into the traditionalism of the existing shot that's been around as long as it's been around.
I don't know. I think I have a little sway here. Okay. I've watched Lonzo Ball get through to the NBA with the shot he had.
Oh my God. That's a good one. Yes. I actually spoke to Fred Vincent about that. He did a great job helping that young man. Spent, as you can imagine, a lot of time with him. Some of that might have been able to be short-cutted, and maybe not. But that buy, he had to get that buy-in first. And he apparently got enough of buy-in from Lonzo to have this effect that we're starting to watch and enjoy.
Yeah. And even, I mean,
go ahead.
Well, last year you saw real improvement, and I was just watching him tonight, and it looks even better.
Yes. And he most likely, I should couch this carefully. I have come to learn this in the journey as well. I remember calling the Utah Jazz, and in however way I could possibly do it, I didn't want to say, refer to myself as a shooting coach. The long and short of it is, the woman on the other end, as I called and said, look, I'd like to talk to the GM or somebody about your challenges on the offensive side. And at the time, they were very challenged. I'm going back maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, having a difficult time, ranked very low in two of those categories of scoring. The woman finally says, oh, you're a shooting coach. I said, okay, that's what I, she goes, oh, why didn't you say so? We've got three of you. we've got three shooting coaches on the staff. And my first thought was, and this may shock you or some of the audience, my first thought was, now it makes sense. I understand why they're struggling. Now, why was that my first thought? Because even at the high school level, I don't come across too many coaches who agree on whatever it is they're saying to anybody when it comes to shooting. I mean, I've heard coaches advise players at the foul line to do a catwalk maneuver where they're they're moving their feet up and down like a cat does, trying to check out the rug that they're on and making it comfortable or something. I've seen other coaches implore players to bend down as low as they can and dribble down by their knees and come up and shoot the foul shot out of that position. So as I said, every coach considers themselves as a shooting coach, and it's not unlikely that those three shooting coaches probably weren't conveying the same messages to the same players as each other. And what kind of a message does that send? What level of confusion could one expect from that environment? And would that explain some of the challenges that exist internally? It would to an outsider like me. Sure. Which player is going to listen to which part of which coach is advising them?
This takes me to a conversation I had with Jamal Crawford where we talked about where players would fit the most post-playing career. And we touched on scouting. I think that that's a place that a lot of players deserve roles just because they know the game better than most, right? They played it. But skill development still feels like one of those places where players aren't represented as well as they could, or people who have at least touched a basketball. I wonder when you look at that field, when you look at AAU and all of these different voices, does it feel like there is this larger, not problem per se, but this larger like institutional issue that is the pushing players towards poor development?
Pushing them towards poor development?
There is a verbiage here that I'm trying to go for that I can't quite get, but pushing them in a direction that's not expanding the game of basketball, right? When you looked at the shot, you found that there was weak innovation, that we kind of rested on our laurels. Do you think that this is kind of what's happening inside of skill development right now, that we're not seeing much development?
I think that could be a part of it for certain. I really do. I also think the AAU in particular,
right,
could be a bigger part of it too, because, and truth be told, looking back on my childhood, and I'd rather play than train. I mean, I want to play. The reality is, and there's got to be a balance created, and it's hard for a youth player to be mature enough to do it on his own. There's got to be somebody in those circles that are saying to them, look, you're only going to do this few times in a game. In order to get better at doing it during all those games, you need to set aside this much time for development. And you need to also make sure that you're seeking out the right kind of people to do the right kind of development. And again, that's putting a good amount of burden on that youth player, but hopefully a parent, whether it be a mom or a dad, or coaches around them, whether they are high school coaches or whatever, or friends that or relatives that are genuinely concerned about that player's development, can help guide them through that process. Again, another reality that I've become abundantly aware of, every trainer, like coaches, every trainer is a shooting coach. And that, right. I mean, I've had guys come to me and female players come to me, and I would query them. I would say, look, Tony, what does he have you do? What does she have you doing in terms of off the catch and shoot? Do you do drilling with them? What kinds of drills are they? I want to try to find out as much as I can, so that I can be as much benefit to whomever it is I'm trying to train. What kind of a set, what kind of offense do you play in high school, or if we're doing it during AAU season? How do they have you playing? Where are you playing? What types of shots are you likely to take? Where, from what part of the court? All of those things help me formulate a strategy to try to achieve the best results I can possibly achieve for any given player at any given level. And I do treat that very, very seriously. You know, I'm being a steward of that player during the time they're under my watch. And I, you know, I relish in that. I mean, that's quite an honor and a huge responsibility. And I want them to advance as quickly and as fast as I can get them to advance. But those are things that are out there that, that we're up against.
Talk to me about, because I, as someone who writes a few articles once a year, writing's hard, man, and I've never been a huge fan, but tell me a little bit about the experience of trying to write this book. Obviously, you have to finagle in. There's a thing I'm trying to do here, and I can't tell you exactly what it is, but I need to write a book as well. How difficult has this process been?
It's really challenging. It's,
yeah,
one of the things I've ever tried to undertake. I've never written a book before. There's been a lot of books. I've got a guy down in the South who has written a lot of very scientific articles, who is a basketball fanatic, who is urging me to make sure that I write it in layman's terms, which I intend to do. But he's just driving that point home to me so that I don't lose sight of that. And I think that is important. There's been a book out there called The Physics of Basketball. That is, that reads like an encyclopedia. It's not an easy read. I want this to be a book that is thought provocative, just enough to get people to start questioning. Yeah, why are we accepting certain training that we've come to accept from coaches out there, shooting coaches in particular? And right now, it's no secret that this game has evolved to the point where it's all about shooting now. It is all about making a certain number and taking a certain number of those long three-point shots because they're worth 3 points. So I'm talking about that part of the game. I'm talking about how the game's evolved in that. And Steph Curry, whom I love, what he's done for me, unbeknownst to him, he's kind of highlighted one of my hypotheses that I started probably 10 or 11 years ago, which was a few years into the journey, which was this, Tony. The two easiest shots in the game of basketball, I've come to understand, is not what I grew up on. It is the foul shot, which is totally uncontested. Nobody can stand in front of you. You get 10 seconds to rest. You can shoot it from wherever you want to stand, blah, 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 blah. And the three ball. The three-point shot, and the further out you are, the less likely you are to be guarded very closely. As long as you're within your range, that ought to be a higher percentage shot than what we've come to accept. I'll be talking about that in the book. And then I'll be talking about how if you keep going to the same, to the coaches who are teaching the same core elements of a traditional shooting system, and none of them, and you can substitute a Ben Simmons in here possibly, none of them seem to help you, then would it be all that far-fetched to go to somebody who is radically different and saying that this might benefit you? If it's that radically different, then wouldn't you kind of expect more radically kinds of results as opposed to incremental results, which we as as traditional shooting coaches have become very comfortable accepting, unfortunately. Right. You know, I mean, some of them jump out of their skin if they can improve your foul shooting by 6 or 7% over a whole summer or three summers. That's not what my experiences are showing me with the implementation of these new movements, more efficient movements that I've been promoting out there for the last 10 years.
So I've heard players go to Navy SEALs to condition their mental for foul shooting. You're saying that this won't be necessary?
No, I've heard about how the Navy SEALs have shared some of their training regimen with some collegiate programs. I didn't know they were that specific and doing it related to shooting. However, if you want to become a marksman shooter on the basketball court, some of the principles that those marksmen of the United States Army try to live by or practice by seem to work pretty well. And the buy-in is obviously very strong. And they're supported by documentation or research to suggest why they're being still utilized. That hasn't been the case with traditional shooting. The playoffs, the most recent playoffs that we had last season, Trae Young goes off for 40 points one night, knocking down a lot of shots. Trae Young two nights later, can't hit a shot. Can't hit it. What happens? What really happened? Well, Trae Young has taken a lot of very bad shots. No, if you look at the video, that wasn't the case. What Trae Young was altering a lot of those shots, altering jump shots. No, that wasn't what the video showed. So what really, well, you know, everybody's off. I mean, these are the traditional response. Everybody's off. Jrue Holiday, same kind of experience. Roger Gallo had those experiences. Now, I don't seem to have them. I don't worry about doing a shooting demonstration and ever being off. Oh, I wish I had that feeling as a shooter playing ball. I had those concerns. I don't have them now. Why don't I have them now? During a shooting demonstration in front of thousands. Because the movements are that reliable. And that helps my psyche to remain freer. There's no stress. There's no mental part of it, applying pressure internally. And we've all acknowledged that mental element that we all right. like to quickly go to when somebody can't shoot foul shots or somebody can't shoot jump shots, or, you know, that's a quick one to throw out there. Well, you know, it's a mental thing. It's a mental. I've dealt with some of those apparent mental cases, according to parents, only to find out that the some of the simplicity in the economy of movements seem to address that by virtue of those movements. The confidence builds and the player benefits psychologically. Now, I'm not a psychologist, but I can see the psychology at work, whether they're hesitating or they're not hesitating, taking a shot when I watch them play. So it becomes evident that, wow, this might be one solution to that mental part of it to some degree. It shouldn't be ignored, at least.
I wanted to give you the chance just to kind of thank you for your time, I think, first. Like, I appreciate the time you've given me up until this point. And to let people know where they can find you, what they can look for. Go ahead and plug anything that you have right now.
Well, they can find me at rogergallo, rogergallo.com, and at the Gallo Method. Those are the two best areas. My contact information is up there. I've uploaded some podcasts that I've had recently up there. They can read more about some of the stuff that I've been doing. They may glean some additional information from that website and follow me. By all means, follow me. I'm doing some interesting things. I'm trying to do more interesting things. I'm really struggling with putting out video yet, because it's part of my secret sauce and I don't like the way that sounds. That's the double-edged sword that I'm constantly dealing with. I just had a former player that I played with in high school, who's a quite a trainer in another part of the country. And he said to me in the phone call, you showed me, and you're reticent to do that, but you showed it to me. And I do it. I've stolen it from you and I'm using it all the time. And every time I bring it out, I get comments from everybody. And I'm saying, oh my God, I don't mind him doing that. Of course, it's flattering, but I'm still trying to figure out how I can monetize this.
Right.
And still get it out there. And I've been protective of it, maybe to an extreme. And I'm trying not to be, but it's basketball shooting. It's not a solution to the Delta variant. It's basketball shooting. And coaches who want me to send them stuff all the time, what do they study? Video.
Yeah.
Ad nauseum. So I don't mind showing it to anybody live. Anybody. Anything, question it, bring it, challenge it. I love that. Bring me out a player that's 20 years old. Put them in front of me. Have their hand on me. And then we'll set up game situational stuff and see if it has value, is merited, or it isn't. So hopefully I'll be able to get some video out there. I'm still trying to get my head around how to do it and still protect it enough before the book comes out.
Roger, I am 26 and I feel like I am learning how to use Twitter every single day. I am figuring out how to make my brand every day. I'm still not there.
There you go.
So
I'm something from you. Hey, I'm grateful to you for having me on this. I really am, Tony. I cherish the opportunity and I appreciate you for doing it.
And of course. I hope
it's proven to be very informational for some of your audience.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think that the part that I grasp with the most, right? Like I'm not taking any of this and going to the court. Nothing I can do. I appreciate the mental side of it, right? I like to compare some of the things you're talking about, like efficiency. There's efficiency in life. Removing extraneous motions and extraneous people and extraneous situations. Yeah. These are things that are helpful in life, not just in basketball.
They really are. You're wise for your years.
Roger, thank you so much for driving in the lane with me today, brother. I appreciate you.
I've had a lot of fun. Thank you.